Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. A few weeks ago, the United Way of Pennsylvania released a report that found a quarter of Pennsylvanians live above the federal poverty level, but still find it hard to pay for essentials like housing and food. More than half of the people living in Philadelphia fell into that category. But after that, the statistics showed that the largest percentage of Pennsylvanians who can barely afford essentials, if they can at all, live in rural counties. Rural Pennsylvania faces several challenges, including access to health care and transportation, and has been hit hard by the opioid crisis. To discuss the challenges facing rural Pennsylvania today, Barry Denk is the director of the Center for Rural Pennsylvania. Barry Denk, good to see you again.
Good morning, Scott. Great to be here again. Thank you.
Also joining us was Republican State Senator Gene Yaw of Lycoming County. He represents four rural Pennsylvania counties in the northeastern part of the state and chairs the Center for Rural Pennsylvania's Board of Directors. Republican Senator Yaw, always good to see you.
Good to see you. I also, as a point of interest, I represent Five rural counties.
See, I got to count all of them, you know? And also joining us on the phone is Indiana County Commissioner Shireen Hess. Commissioner Hess, welcome to the program.
Good morning, and hello from Western Pennsylvania.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@wytf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WYTF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwytf. Again, the phone number is 1-800-729-7532. Barry Denk, let me start with you.
Sure.
What don't people know about rural Pennsylvania, or what do they get wrong?
Well, I think there are some stereotypes about rural, bucolic, maybe somewhat backward, that type of thing. But we found rural Pennsylvania is a great place to live. There is a phenomenal quality of life. People like to live there. Young people desire to maybe leave to start an education career, but they want to move back because of the quality of life. So I think at times it's a mixed bag. I think if you've seen one rural community, you've seen one rural community. There are vast differences between eastern rural Pennsylvania and western rural Pennsylvania. Commissioner Hess certainly knows the challenges that western Pennsylvania is faced with the decline of steel and coal and some of the residual effect from that. There are parts of rural Pennsylvania that are growing. It's a tourism mecca up in the northern tier with Route 6. Rural Pennsylvania is extremely diverse, and so it's a challenge to paint it with one single brush stroke because of its diversity.
I'm curious, when you say that there's a difference between rural eastern Pennsylvania and rural western Pennsylvania, what kind of differences?
Well, in Monroe Pike counties, there was considerable in-migration. A lot from New York, and so housing values climbed dramatically. There were challenges with affordable housing infrastructure. That's leveled off somewhat. There was concern a number of years ago about sprawl and development. If you look at some of the counties in and around southeastern, south central Pennsylvania, a lot of growth, concern about loss of farmland. But I remember one legislator out from western Pennsylvania who said, I'll take all the sprawl I can get because of the economic condition, aging infrastructure, aging communities, a number of third class cities, declining populations, declining tax revenues. That's not typical of every community in western Pennsylvania, but we still, when we look at the numbers, aging in place, loss of population, there are some clear, distinct differences between western and eastern Pennsylvania.
Senator Yaw, I'm curious about your colleagues. I mean, often we in the public or we in the media sometimes portray the legislature as there's a rural and urban divide under that green dome in the state capitol. Is there? And the follow-up question to that is, how much do urban legislators know about rural Pennsylvania and vice versa?
That's an interesting question. I think that there is not so much a divide under the dome. I think, though, that people represent their own districts. I mean, their urban areas, they have their own issues, and they represent their districts. And I think that rural Pennsylvania legislators are do the same thing. They try to do what's best for their districts. I've tried a lot through either the Center for Rural Pennsylvania or through the Environmental Resources and Energy Committee to get people.
Which you chair, right?
I chair. To get legislators to come to see what rural Pennsylvania is experiencing, for example, especially with the gas industry. And I have to tell you, it is virtually impossible to get any legislator to go north of Interstate 80. It's like I don't know what we're the Never Land or something up there, and
they'd love it.
It's so important to the state and everything that goes on. Now, when I say that, as part of the Environmental Resources and Energy Committee, I'm having a hearing. I think it's next week in Philadelphia concerning the refinery fire.
Right.
Well, so some of the things cross over, and I'm willing to do that, but sometimes I think dragging people out of the more urban areas is like, come on, we do normal things in rural Pennsylvania, just like everybody else.
Well, give them an example of, I mean, you don't have to use names, but a legislator or legislators who won't go above Interstate 80.
Well, probably the majority of them from the larger metropolitan areas.
And what reasons do they get?
They're too busy, and they don't want to do that, and it takes too much time. It's a 2-day trip, or you have to go up one day and then stay overnight and then spend the next day. We've really tried very, very hard, and both with the hearings that we've had through the Center for Rural Pennsylvania relating to opioids and with my environmental committee. I mean, it's difficult.
But when you say that legislators, both urban and rural, represent their districts, that's fine. That's what they were elected to do. But they also were elected to make laws, make decisions that have an impact on the state as a whole.
I agree. And that's why I try to do it. I'm by far not the perfect legislator. That's for sure. I'm not really sure that person has ever been invented yet. But I really do try and understand. Just like I said, I'm having this hearing in Philadelphia at the request of Senator Williams. And I think it's appropriate for something that the Environmental Resources and Energy Committee would do.
Mm-hmm. Barry.
If I can just add to that, the common ground question that you raised, human nature being what it is, people come together during a crisis or a catastrophe. And I think it's fair to say that the opioid crisis was a catastrophe that brought people together. Our hearings started in rural, but we expanded them and went to some urbanized areas. And I think that tragic issue really brought the Commonwealth together as one and recognized that those afflicted with a substance use disorder, it doesn't matter what age, what geography, what income level. And I think the legislature coalesced as one body with the executive branch to say, this is something affecting the entire Commonwealth. And I think they found common ground and they worked together for good legislation.
I agree with that. There were common grounds, but then there's also differences. And, some of the things that you've mentioned in your lead-ins, and I mean, health care, how things are treated, especially in the opioid area, in an urban setting is a little bit different than what happens in rural Pennsylvania. And some of it's just because of the distance involved and the facilities and all there, and transportation. In a more urban setting, you may have some care facility. You walk across the street. Well, in rural Pennsylvania, it may be an hour's drive away, and that creates problems. So, what Barry said is absolutely right. Though we did come together, I think, on that because it's a statewide health crisis.
Commissioner Hess, wanted to ask you, Barry touched on a number of the issues, the challenges facing rural counties. Your county is unique in that you're not far from Allegheny County and Pittsburgh. I would imagine that your greatest, most populated municipality is Indiana itself, but the rest of the county is probably rural. What are some of the biggest challenges that Indiana County faces and other rural counties face?
Well, you're absolutely right. We have some unique challenges. And to add to the discussion on the opioid crisis, our emergency services are contracting because of lack of funding, and our volunteer fire departments are having lots of problems. You know, they don't fight fires too often anymore. It's more emergency response, and a lot of that is the opioid issue and other related things. So and that's, you know, so our services are contracting even as the need is growing. But yeah, we have all the peculiarities of trying to do economic development in rural areas. That geography gets us getting from one place to another is challenging. You know, Indiana borough itself, Indiana the town, is the largest town of 15,000 in the entire 15th congressional district. So we're facing a lot of workforce development issues. Our lack of accessible and affordable broadband has caused this digital divide, and it made it very difficult for rural areas to be part of the wider economy. Our aging population, as was mentioned, retraining opportunities. I mean, we have a lot of partners working very hard to do retraining and for our displaced workers. Our agriculture sector is everywhere in Pennsylvania, and the nation is having its own challenges, especially dairy. So, yeah, there are many, 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 many challenges. And I want to say I'm a big fan of the Center for Rural Pennsylvania and all the valuable research. Senator Yaw and Director Denk, thank you for that. Big, big fan ever since my days of working with the Water Resources Education Network.
Well, your website does have a lot of valuable data that the Pennsylvanians can learn about rural Pennsylvania. We're going to talk about a lot of these issues specifically and maybe what can be done about them to solve some of these problems in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Check out some of the upcoming topics for Smart Talk at WITF.org/smarttalk. You can see some of the shows that we're working on, such as human trafficking, service dogs, and preparing for retirement. We invite you to share your questions in advance by sending us a voice memo or leaving voicemail. See what's coming up at WITF.org/smarttalk. Today we're talking about the challenges facing rural Pennsylvania. Our guest today, Republican State Senator Gene Yaw of Lycoming County. He represents five rural Pennsylvania counties in the northeastern part of the state and chairs the Center for Rural Pennsylvania's Board of Directors. Barry Danks, Director of the Center for Rural Pennsylvania, and Indiana County Commissioner Shireen Hess is with us as well. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Maybe you live in one of those rural counties and would like to talk about one of the issues or challenges that faces your county. 1-800-729-7532. You can also leave a question or comment on WITS Facebook page. Send us an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. I want to dig down into some of these issues, and you all have listed some of the challenges on the surface that are facing rural counties. But if you had to name one, two, or three that would be priorities that kind of stand above the others, what would they be? Senator Yaw?
Well, that's a very good question. I have to say that I picked three. Opioids is one. I mean, we have people, we still have upwards of 15 people a day dying of drug overdoses in Pennsylvania. And that's one that has some real direct impact on people and families, healthcare, and everything else. The other issue, which Commissioner Hess hit on, is broadband. And broadband actually, it it crosses everything. It affects business. It affects schools. It affects kids' ability to learn. It affects healthcare, telemedicine. And we had a hearing on broadband in Wellsboro, and there was a doctor there testified about the fact that some counseling is now, even for opioids, is online. Well, but if you can't get you don't have access to the right speed for broadband, you can't get it. And if you need it right away. And the other one, which Commissioner Hess hit on, is a huge problem in Pennsylvania, and that is the EMS fire service. And, you know, all that comes about, in part, there's been a demographic change in the way fire companies are treated or the way that they're looked at. When I was growing up, the local fire company was the social hub of the community. That's no longer the case. And part of it is that parents would take their kids there because they assumed that their kids would join the fire company and they would pick up where the parents left off. Well, now, I forget what the numbers are, that everybody enters the workforce, they're probably going to have 8 to 10 different jobs in their lifetime. So why? That connection of staying in one area and being part of the community is not there. And there are less and less people. There's too much training. It costs too much. And I know I had some complaints just within the last couple of days about the emergency medical technicians and what they are required to do.
Is that going to be something the state is going to have to pay for? I mean, obviously, we have a money issue there. We don't have enough volunteers. So you wonder whether the day is coming when Pennsylvania cannot staff its emergency services, its fire companies, with all volunteers. And somehow that has to be paid for.
I think you're right. I think that we're headed to the fact that a scenario where we have probably part paid and part volunteer. Hopefully, that's the best I think that we could get out of it, and we may end up with all some kind of paid EMS services.
Commissioner Hess, Indiana County, what are you considering there?
Well, it is a challenge, and you know, volunteer firefighting used to be actually funded by wealthy merchants and tradesmen who had the skills and the finances, and we got away from that and gone to the volunteer model. And there are many masters of this trade, this craft, and hats off to our volunteer firefighters and emergency responders because they really are the backbone of rural communities. But this is a model that just is very problematic. And, you know, we are going to have to face up to the fact that we're sacrificing public safety. We need to come up with some solutions. And it's not for lack of trying. I mean, there are many partners trying to work on this, and you know, it really is a challenge with the funding. But
well, you only can do. I mean, I've heard firefighters and EMS say, you know, that you only can do so many chicken barbecues.
That, right on.
And it is because typically that would be enough. I say typically, historically, that would be enough in the past to provide money for a long time for a fire department.
The Center for Rural Pennsylvania, we've done several studies on the EMS and firefighting. And I remember the one study that we had done. One of the complaints was that people didn't want to do it because they wanted to fight fires. They didn't want to serve chicken or turkey dinners because they spend the majority of their time fundraising.
Yeah. Right, right.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Looking at another issue, as I mentioned, Barry Denk, your website has just a myriad of statistics. Looking down at incomes between rural and urban areas of Pennsylvania, there are a lot of statistics that are similar in both urban and rural areas that may surprise some people. Unemployment rates are very similar. The rate of those without health insurance, very similar across urban and rural areas. But there are some differences. One of the big ones that I noticed is that on a per capita basis, rural residents earn about $12,000 less than their urban counterparts. 37% of rural residents earn less than $35,000 a year. Now, I know one of the first things you will hear is, well, the cost of living in many rural areas is a lot less than it would be, say, in a Philadelphia or a Pittsburgh, Scranton, something like that. But does it even out? I mean, does that disparity in incomes even out between the cost of living?
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't. Okay, so then what's the answer?
Jobs, right. Income, there's no question right. about it. I think the natural gas industry and that development of that has helped considerably for certain parts of Pennsylvania in terms of income generation. No question about that. But the types of jobs and the salaries that can be commanded by those jobs, but so much affects that. We've already talked about the issue of broadband, and that does affect economic development as well as a whole host of other things. Transportation. And getting goods and services to and from. Gas now in this Harrisburg area is right around $2.90. Well, it's probably that or more up in rural Pennsylvania. And so if the average rural citizen is commuting 30 minutes or so to a job, multiply that times the type of gas. Generally, with housing and some other services, the cost is less than in urbanized areas. But when you look at utilities sometimes and certainly transportation costs, it does kind of even it out. But there's clearly a disparity. Part of that, though, is the fact that of aging population. And we're an aging-in-place state, but particularly in rural Pennsylvania. So their incomes are fixed. So you need to factor that into the consideration in terms of the income difference that does exist between urban and rural. That's clearly a challenge. By 2025, there will be more people age 65 and older than 21 and younger in rural Pennsylvania. And right now, 19 counties of rural Pennsylvania, there's more deaths than births. And so that dynamic of demographics is affecting all types of issues, from fire service volunteers to economic development, workforce issues, professionals available to offer services that warrant higher salaries.
So, okay, you touched on a number of issues there. Birth rates are down. When you say that I'm assuming that there were younger people moving out of rural areas than moving in. Is that accurate?
Yes. By and large, the younger people still are leaving rural Pennsylvania. The opportunity, though, is to not lose contact with them because some of them do want to move back. We did a survey of rural youth, and by and large, they find rural Pennsylvania an attractive place to live and would want to move back as their families are being raised.
Senator, most people are employed by small employers, small businesses in this state and across the country.
Right.
In rural Pennsylvania, most of the, and it's over 50% of the employers have five or fewer employees. Those businesses tend not to pay as much. For a business or an employer that pays more money that could increase those incomes for rural Pennsylvanians, what does rural Pennsylvania have to offer that, I mean, Barry just listed a lot of the challenges there. What does rural Pennsylvania have to offer that would attract an employer that paid good money?
Well, I know a lot of employers, small employers that pay. We're not talking about minimum wage jobs.
No. For the most part, they're not paying $25, $30 an hour either.
Well,
unless it is a gas job or something like that.
There are other businesses that I am aware of that pay very, very well. The biggest complaint that I hear when I'm out in the, with my constituents and stuff and traveling around my district is we do not have a trained workforce. And that's absolutely true for my district as well. We do not have a trained workforce. And
that's a huge challenge in Western PA as well.
I hear a friend of mine that works for a big road construction contractor, and I said, how's business? Business is great. We cannot find enough people to work. Now, in some of it is a problem. They can't pass a drug test. That's another issue. The trained workforce, and I think that's something that I've really hit on, in a big way, and that is to say we need to spend more money on the technical education, technology and education. I read a study a couple months ago. It was by Deloitte. And it said the focus of the study is what's happening to the middle class in the United States. That was what, you know, the United States was based on, the middle class, the working class, the blue collar workers and stuff. And what's gone on? There were three reasons stated in that study as to what's happening to the middle class. Number one, the baby boomers are retiring. That was the middle class. Number two, we don't have the training facilities anymore to train people to work in a, quote, factory setting. Now, a factory setting could be something that, just like this radio station. I mean, you know, a clean area, but it's still a factory setting. And the other is the stigma attached to it, that we have developed this idea, and I think partially guidance counselors in high schools are responsible for this, to say, oh, well, we need to send all of our kids to a four-year college. Well, maybe you don't need to go to a four-year college. I also chair the board of Pennsylvania College of Technology. And we have about a 96, I think, placement rate. We have many, many people starting in the $80,000 to $100,000 range, you know, coming out of that institution. And those are the types of things that I think that we need to work on in rural Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's something that would help. We need it. The employers in my district tell me, I need people.
I hear it all the time. And I'm going back to something you said about passing the drug test, because former Governor Corbett actually in this radio station made that comment one time and caught a lot of grief. Since then, we have heard from many, many people, and it only makes sense because we do have an opioid crisis, that a lot of time, often, across the state, okay? I don't know what often is, but that passing a drug test or that background is a bit of a problem. Commissioner Hess, you just heard what Senator Yaw had to say, and you said you were agreeing with retraining being a huge issue. Two questions for you along the lines of what we've just been discussing in the last few minutes. I don't know how much of a position a county commissioner is in to attract new business to a community, but if you made the case for a county like Indiana County for coming into Indiana County to locate, what would you say? And then secondly, talk about that training issue that Indiana County and other rural counties are facing.
Yes, it's like a big ecosystem when it comes to economic development. You need a trained workforce, you need community services, you need a business who sees a quality of life for the community that those employees are going to live in, and it all relates to everything. So economic development is very important to county commissioners, and we work with a number of partners, and recently Indiana County, through our state legislative team, was able to attract Urban Outfitters Distribution Fulfillment Center, which is a big deal for us, a very rural area. But we are all working very hard to find that trained workforce. And we understand that that could have an impact on our housing, that could have an impact on our educational facilities, and it can have an impact on the services, those human services that are, you're going to need mental health services and those kinds of things for, you know, regardless of how many jobs you have, you're going to need all of those kinds of services. So yeah, that's the thing. The rural education gap, we're talking about youth leaving. We see 1 in 5 rural adults have a college degree. And yes, I think we all understand the need for career and technical training, but every single job is going to need some kind of training. The jobs of just going from high school are really don't exist anymore. But we do see pockets of manufacturing happening in our rural areas, and so that's a bright spot. And I want to touch on something that Barry said about the youth moving back. Well, I've seen in Indiana County several cases where youth have come back to do homesteading. They're interested in that quality of life. And they're interested in maybe a quieter way of life to raise a family now. And those are the kinds of things that I would tell businesses, you know, existing businesses, why to stay and why to come to a rural area. Quality of life. We've got we have an ethic here that says we take care of each other and we do address the problems. And, you know, by the way, this is where conservation of our natural resources and development of energy happens in our rural areas. And there's that work ethic, there's that neighborly kind of thing that we do here. And, you know, often people romanticize rural areas and farming and such, and it is a great gig, but challenges. So it's a constant balance and a constant dance trying to address it all.
Go ahead, Barry. We can say.
Just one comment about the workforce issue and the drug testing. At one of our hearings in Cambria County, we heard from some innovation, and I think rural Pennsylvania is a testbed for a lot of innovation. And so some of the testifiers at that hearing were for the Somerset Chamber of Commerce, the CareerLink Center, and the Drug and Alcohol Agency operating out there. Businesses went to the chamber and said, we're having a challenge with workforce. And so they wanted to engage people in recovery for reemployment, recognizing, though, that they needed supportive services while they were on the job or after. But that's and so that's an instance where business said, we have a challenge with workers, but we want to re-engage people who have a substance use disorder who are in recovery. And so they took a challenge and turned it into an opportunity.
Actually, along those same lines, we're hearing much more, not just here in Pennsylvania, but across the country, even on the federal level, about those who have been offenders, who have broken the law, have been in, behind bars and getting jobs and employing those people as they come out. Let's take a phone call from Heather in Lingolstown. Heather, you're on the air.
Hi, I am a small business owner in the construction industry. I want to make that clear. Workforce is a significant challenge. I could triple my business tomorrow if I could get 5 good employees, plain and simple. What we run into is you can't get the younger generation, and yes, there are some good, and I hate to stereotype. However, I can't get them out of their parents' basements. I can't get them to show up on time. I can't get them to pass the drug test. I can't get them to, you know, show up on a daily basis without having to hunt them down sometimes. There is no home life, you know, training of, hey, you go to your work every day, you earn a living, you make it out there on our own. We have too many parents that are just babysitting their kids into their 30s. They can't pass drug screens. In terms of technical skills, we have these technical schools where, yeah, we would love to have 3-4 times as many kids in Dauphin County Technical School or Cumberland Valley Technical School, except it's a fight for funding with the homeschools. The homeschools don't want to give those kids up to the technical schools because they lose the funding. The funding goes to the technical school. And so we're not promoting technical trades in the middle schools, in the high schools. Parents are under this assumption that your kids should all of them are smart enough to go to college. Well, I can tell you right now, not all kids belong in college.
Hey, Heather, you raised a lot of issues. Thank you very much for your call. Your reaction to what Heather had to say?
Oh, I agree with her. I mean, she hits the nail on the head with a lot of things. But one of the things that, you know, there's technical education out there that still is a college education. I mean, you know, like I said, Penn College is a classic example.
It's in your district?
It's in my district. Mm-hmm. And the college has 4-year degrees, and we've moved to, we're issuing master's degrees. We're going to start a master's program in nursing. So there are these hands-on type jobs out there. Welding technology is an amazing. We can't produce enough welders. So they're the people that start. We have trouble keeping them in school because after they finish a year or two, employers come to them and say, "Hey, you can stay in school or you can come to work for me and make $80,000 a year." And if I'm early 20 something and I think, well, you know, $80,000 isn't bad, maybe I should just go to work.
An issue that Heather touched on, and this is not just an issue for rural Pennsylvania, it's an issue everywhere, and that is the soft skills that she talked about. I mean, I don't know I don't know how it's taught nowadays, or you would think that a young person knows that you have to get up, you have to go to work, you have to show up, you can't take days off, you only get so much vacation time. Those soft skills, I hear that so often that is an issue.
I do too, and I'm sure everybody here hears that, and it's just the type of thing. I don't know. I never thought about it. I guess because my dad got up and went to work every day. I was expected to do the same thing. And if I partied too much, I was, in trouble with him because I was not doing what I should do as a kid. But
yeah.
I don't think that's out there today.
No.
Scott, I wanted to say something about that. We call those soft skills now. A lot of people do, but I like to call them essential skills. And it's true. We have gotten away from teaching that. And but there are some efforts now, and in our workforce investment boards are talking about some classes with this, or some how to teach time management and emotional and social competence and work ethic and how to collaborate and how to do teamwork and what it means to be a working person. Those are essential skills. And, we, in the mid-2000s and maybe 15, 20 years ago, we started this downward spiral of disinvesting in education in both K-12 and higher education. We took our eye off as elected leaders and so on. And it was a budget matter, but it was also we forgot to maybe think about the next 20 years and what our workforce was going to look like if we didn't keep the dollars flowing for education and by the way addressing childhood adverse kinds of traumatic events and the toll that those kinds of things were going to take on those children 15 years ago, and what that demographic was going to look like today. So now we're kind of dealing with some things that we may be disinvested in, and now I'm glad to say that there is a lot of talk about re-upping those investments, but it's going to take some time.
Barry, what were you going to say?
Well, it's a societal issue.
Right. It's not just a rural, urban Pennsylvania thing. Yeah.
And I think a lot of the skills that we're talking about were instilled by family. And we didn't expect nor require our educational systems to have to deal with that. That's how we were brought up in terms of work ethic, terms of being on time, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's left the family structure by and large, because the family structure has changed so dramatically in this country. And I think there's an expectation now that needs to be fulfilled by our educational system. So we've in effect thrown another challenge on our educational systems for something that was not part of their domain for the longest periods of time.
I want to talk about education funding in particular in just a few minutes in rural Pennsylvania. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're discussing the challenges facing rural Pennsylvania today with our guest, Indiana County Commissioner Shireen Hess, Republican State Senator Gene Yaw of Lycoming County. He chairs the board of directors for the Center for Rural Pennsylvania, and Barry Denk, director of the Center for Rural Pennsylvania. 1-800-729-7532 is the number to call. If you have a question or a comment, you can send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we're at Smart Talk WITF. Again, that phone number 1-800-729-7532. We talked a little bit right at the very end before the break about education funding. Something that I noticed when I looked at differences between rural areas and urban areas of Pennsylvania, that rural school districts get much more of their funding from the state than do urban districts. Now, a lot of that has to do with geography, logistics, where what's built where. But that would seem to create a real problem when you are relying on the state. You don't have local taxpayers to go to. What about that? I mean, is that a real issue when rural school districts, by the way, which have higher graduation rates than urban districts, are counting on the state for more of their funding than their local taxpayers?
I hear about the local tax contribution all the time. What happens is it depends on the tax base. I mean, you know, in a more urban setting, you have malls, you have higher tax base. So what happens in the rural Pennsylvania is that individual property owners are the ones that get the bill. In Pennsylvania, the latest numbers I think that I saw is we spend about $17,000 per student across the board in Pennsylvania. The national,
and that includes rural and urban.
Yeah,
right.
The national average is something around $14,000. So we actually spend more. But the way Pennsylvania is organized, we have a very decentralized system, and we rely on local control of school districts. I mean, 50 years ago or whatever it was, when 1949, when the school code came out, it was decentralized. You know, we want more, quote, local control. That's why Pennsylvania looks at the local tax base as to fund their school districts. Now, I agree. Under the formulas, I think virtually the majority of the school districts in my district get somewhere around 50% of their funding comes from the state.
Well, let me just interrupt for a second, Senator. Quite frankly, most Pennsylvanians would probably prefer that because it would mean less reliance on property taxes. But it would seem as though rural Pennsylvanians, when they have to rely more on individual property owners rather than businesses that aren't there, that the property tax issue would be a huge issue for rural Pennsylvanians.
It is a huge issue.
It is. And I think compounding the challenge is reassessment. Mm-hmm. And there are some counties that haven't done that for quite a while. It's a very,
like
very
years.
Sensitive issue, but I think reassessment plays into that. And housing stocks, the values of them are less, by and large, in rural areas. So there's a number of things that come into play with that differential.
Would rural Pennsylvanians support getting rid of the property tax, of course, with the caveat that those taxes have to be replaced in some other area? That could mean personal income tax on state level, but more money coming from the state. When you hear from your constituents, Senator, what do you hear?
I hear that from some, because if you just go to somebody and ask them, would you like to get rid of your property?
That's why the caveat has to be in there.
They're going to say yes. If though, you know, personally, I would not, I don't favor that, because if all the money comes from the state and it's all spent, when the roof leaks in the school, where are they going to come? They're going to come to Senator Yaw or Representative whoever and say, you know, you didn't supply enough money in the school district roof leaks. I want you to get it fixed. I don't think that's where our education is. And I understand property taxes are an issue. Maybe there are some things that we've looked at. I know, like freezing property taxes for seniors. Doing some things like that, I think, a little bit to modify and to help them. But I don't know. I just think that property taxes are the way that people have local control. I don't like to pay it either. But, you know, when I go and I look at the school in my district, I know that my taxes went. I can actually identify where my tax money went and where it was spent. I'm not sure that we have the same if all the funding comes from the state and the people who are going to suffer. I have one county that has 6,400 people in the entire county. And that, you know, to say that, oh, well, we're going to base it on some kind of an additional earned income tax or something like that. I mean, what's going to happen? It would be the biggest class system between urban and rural. That's what it would create. The rural districts are going to be totally dependent on what comes out, what comes from the state, where the urban districts, they can still, they have a tax base, they can add a tax to it, they're still going to end up with the three-story atrium, you know, entryway. And
we only have a few minutes left, and an issue that is I know one of the huge issues in rural Pennsylvania is access to health care. When you look at the numbers. In rural Pennsylvania, there's one doctor for every 586 residents compared to one for every 266 in urban areas. Barry, what do you do about that?
You've been in, grin and bear it. No, not to be facetious about that. It is a challenge. There's no question about that. And telehealth, I think is
but then that goes back to broadband.
It goes back to broadband. Yeah. So that is one way, especially if you're looking at specialty areas. Dealing with the opioid crisis again, oftentimes dual diagnosis, mental health challenges. So psychiatric care, adolescent psychiatric care, very challenging in rural Pennsylvania. A hospital in a rural county closed its maternity ward. And so pregnant mothers now have to travel upwards of 50 miles for a maternity ward. There's greater consolidation of healthcare systems within the Commonwealth. Many of them are maintaining rural outreach efforts. But access, it remains a challenge. There's no question about it. And I think it contributes to individuals not being proactive and taking somewhat more ownership in their health care because it's not readily available for them to access to do preventive measures.
One huge problem in rural Pennsylvania is just the ability to hire doctors.
Well, that's what I was getting at. I mean, do we have any programs here where I know that some states do this, where your student debt is forgiven or reduced if you agree to serve or live in a community for so long?
I don't think we have anything active like that. I know one of the underlying reasons behind the Commonwealth Medical College was to. The idea that if you trained local people in a rural setting in Scranton is where it was located, Scranton or Wilkes-Barre, then they would stay in rural Pennsylvania. And that has not worked out. I mean, and I don't blame. Doctors are like anybody else that's trained. They go where the jobs are, pay the most.
Very briefly, several years ago, we did some work with one of the healthcare systems with their rural rotations. And they found that they were able to recruit a doc on the first visit. The doc was interested in the community. Oftentimes, it was the spouse. Who killed the deal. I don't like the housing. I don't like shopping options. I don't like the school districts, et cetera, et cetera. That gets to some of the recruitment retention challenges.
Barry, we only have about 2 minutes left, and you told me that there was one thing you wanted to let our listeners know about rural Pennsylvania.
Sure. Two things, if I can. First of all, we've done some research work on what's called the transfer of wealth. There is money in rural Pennsylvania. There's no question about it. Some of it's old money, some of it's new money because of the gas exploration. The development, the expansion of community foundations, and being able to get citizens in rural Pennsylvania to say, I'm going to adopt my community as one of my heirs, and include a community foundation for part of that wealth that they own. And at their passing will be transferred on to the next generation. Well, oftentimes that next generation lives in North Carolina or Arizona or whatever. And so community foundations, and I know one in particular out of Elk and McKean County that I'm speaking at next month, doing phenomenal work in getting local citizens to invest in their community. I think that holds golden opportunities for reinvestment in rural Pennsylvania by citizens who live there and want to invest in the future in those communities for the next generation. The other thing I think it's important to talk about, because it's not too early, is Census 2020. There are a number of rural parts of Pennsylvania that have been undercounted in prior censuses. That results in less dollars coming into Pennsylvania. It's a zero-sum game in terms of that income for urban and rural areas. So I think we need to make a major push to get as many Pennsylvanians, particularly rural areas, engaged in the census and participating in that, because that does result in more money coming back. And we know traditionally there are parts of rural Pennsylvania that have been undercounted.
Mm-hmm. We only have about 30 seconds left. Senator Yaw, what you have the last word. What do Pennsylvanians need to know, think more about when it comes to rural Pennsylvania?
Well, I'd put it this way, I think that this is across the board, the whole problem. 73% of the population in Pennsylvania lives in 19 counties. 73% in 19 counties. That means 27% lives in the other 48 counties. That's the division that kind of addresses virtually everything we've spoken about.
Mm. Those are some big disparities, and that is a number that will get a lot of people's attention. Of course, we know that at election time when there's a statewide election, but that's about the only time we hear about that. I want to thank you very much for being with us today, Barry Denk, Senator for Rural Pennsylvania, Republican State Senator Gene Yaw, and Indiana County Commissioner Shireen Hess. Thank all of you for being with us today.
Thank
You're
you.
Welcome. Thank you.
Coming up tomorrow, we're going to be talking about human trafficking, also speaking with the author of a book about George Washington and the American Revolution, and on the seas, how the French helped the Americans win the Revolution.